Good morning, and welcome to the West Valley News Digest. I'm Karen Kelly, your volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'll be starting out with news from the West Valley View, which covers Buckeye, Avondale, Goodyear, and Tolleson. I will then be reading from the Wickenburg Sun. Then we'll follow with news from Glendale, Peoria, and Surprise. So let's get started with news from westvalley.com. Our first article today is Abrazo West Completes Hybrid OR Construction. Abrazo West has completed construction on a new high-tech hybrid operating room, OR, a nearly $7 million investment that combines the sterile environment of a traditional OR with advanced cardiac catheterization lab capabilities. The hybrid OR allows surgeons to perform complex, minimally invasive cardiovascular and vascular surgeries, as well as electrophysiology procedures in a single space. Patient procedures are scheduled to begin in August. By giving us the option to provide both minimally invasive and traditional open treatment options in a single space, the hybrid OR will enable us to tailor our treatment plans for patients who may not otherwise have successful outcomes, said Stacy Hancock, DO, a board-certified vascular surgeon with Abrazo West. A key feature of the hybrid OR is a ceiling-mounted imaging system known as Azurion 7M20 with FlexArm, made by Philips Healthcare. Its C-arm rotates on 8 axes, enabling medical teams to perform imaging on patients from head to toe, left and right sides, with both 2D and 3D visualizations. The new hybrid OR is another example of how we are meeting our commitment to invest in a quality, high acuity care that West Valley residents can access where they live, without having to travel out of the area for complex surgical procedures, said Hans Dreisnack, Abrazo West Campus CEO. Goodyear Mayor Joe Pizziola attended a ribbon-cutting ceremony July 30th at Abrazo West to mark the completion of construction on the hybrid OR. That concludes the article, Abrazo West Completes Hybrid OR Construction. Our next article is Goodyear High Opens Its Doors, written by Joshua Fenty. The Goodyear High School Mavericks began their first academic year in their new space. As students rushed to their classes, Principal Jason Lynn expressed his commitment to providing a quality experience. "We want to make sure that all of our staff develop deep connections with our kids," Lynn said. "We want to make sure they're safe and enjoying coming to campus. This is not just the beginning of a new building or school. It's the beginning of a brand new story that our very first class of ninth graders are writing." Goodyear High School hosted its ribbon-cutting ceremony at 9 a.m. August 4th, the first day of school. GHS students, teachers, and staff were joined by Goodyear Mayor Joe Pizziola, as well as District Governing Board members Vice Mayor Wally Campbell and Council members Brandon Hampton, Benita Beckles, and Trey Terry. Terry was a president of the Awafria High School District Governing Board prior to becoming part of the Goodyear City Council. He said that the completion of the new building was a long time coming. "It's a massive achievement, and everyone from the district staff and construction staff to the planning folks has been great," Terry said. "I was the governing board president at the time when Mr. Lynn was hired to be principal of this school. I know he's going to do a tremendous job representing this school and building the culture here." Current governing board president Kristen Acton and board member Corby Naylor also attended with Superintendent Mark Yislis and Deputy Superintendents Tom Huffman and Philip Nolan, leaders from nearby school districts and the Chase building team. Construction on GHS began in May 2024. The campus is a two-story, 77,400-square-foot classroom facility. Lynn said that the school can currently accommodate 1,700 students, but there's land for two more buildings. He said the additional facilities would allow them to accommodate over 2,000 students. The 1,400-square-foot lecture hall's sunken seating accommodates 72 people and features motorized projectors, ground floor power access, and a 2D and 3D art studio. Additionally, the 47,645-square-foot auditorium and cafeteria seats 490 people and includes a TV and film studio, robotics lab, and scene shop. The ClearWing audiovisual package features an integrated audio system that provides sound coverage in common areas, makeup rooms, and restrooms. The gymnasium is 59,949 square feet, including a 14,035 square foot main gym with six basketball hoops, one full-size court, and two half-size courts. The bleacher's capacity is 1,788 guests. The gymnasium also has a nearly 7,000-square-foot practice gym, which seats 142 people. GHS also has a 2,535-square-foot dance and cheer room with acoustical ceilings, recessed flooring, floor-to-ceiling mirrors, and ballet bars. In addition to a wrestling room, there is a weight room that is 3,800 square feet, a sports medicine lab, and four locker rooms, 1,196 lockers, showers, and a laundry facility. For football and soccer, the school has a 13,413 square foot field house, which features home and visitor concession stands, restrooms, and locker rooms. Baseball and softball games will be housed in the 2,250-square-foot field. For Lynn, the new class of students has the power to shape the school's future through their actions. "You are the founders," he said, addressing the new class of freshmen. "We're lifelong learners, and not just learning for a test. We learn because we're curious and we want to grow. It means we respect the diversity of people around us, because our differences make us stronger. And it means that we know we have the power to make a real impact on our school, our city, and the world beyond. You are the ones who get to set the tone, build a culture, and start traditions that will go on for years to come." That concludes the article, Goodyear High Opens Its Doors. Our next article is Goodyear's Trotting Park Site Transform, written by Joe McHugh. For more than 50 years, a massive concrete structure near Cotton Lane and Interstate 10 stood as a mysterious reminder of the Phoenix Trotting Park, a once ambitious harness racing venue that opened in January 1965 and closed soon after. The park was Arizona's premier harness racing destination, where drivers rode in sulkies pulled by horses. It featured grandstands, betting windows, stables, and a fine dining restaurant, considered state-of-the-art at the time. The opening night ceremony had over 12,000 people attend, said Trevor Freeman, a historian of the Phoenix Trotting Park, in a press release. It was a huge kickoff to what the owners thought would be a very successful business. Designed by Italian architects, the futuristic structure aimed to usher in a new era of racing and entertainment for the Phoenix area. However, limited access hampered attendance. In the 1960s, Van Buren Street was the only major route to the park, and there was no freeway nearby. The inconvenient commute contributed to dwindling crowds and the park's eventual closure. The structure remained empty for five decades, becoming a familiar landmark for travelers heading west. it was demolished in 2017. Last year, construction began on Goodyear High School on part of the old racetrack property. The school opened to students earlier this week. That concludes the article, Goodyear's Trotting Park Site Transformed. Our next article is Teravalis Opens First Model Homes. Howard Hughes and Century Communities announced the opening of the first model homes at Teravalis, the new Howard Hughes community in the Phoenix West Valley. Located in Florio, the community's inaugural village, the model homes offer prospective buyers an early look at the lifestyle and design that will define Teravalis. As the first models to open at Teravalis, this major milestone represents the culmination of years of thoughtful planning, collaboration, and ambition, said Charlie Friedrichs, president of the Arizona region for Howard Hughes. It's an exciting moment for all of us who have been part of bringing this bold vision to life. We're thrilled to welcome early visitors and future residents to experience the beginning of something truly extraordinary. Century Communities is introducing two model homes, which are now open for daily tours at the property on Sun Valley Parkway in Buckeye. Five floor plans will be available, with 3 and 4 bedroom options, ranging from 1,388 to 2,149 square feet. We're proud to be the first home builder to debut model homes at Teravalis and to continue our strong partnership with Howard Hughes, said Taylor Lilly, Phoenix Division President at Century Communities. Our long-standing relationship is built on a shared commitment to thoughtful development, and Teravalis is a perfect example, bringing much-needed new homes to Phoenix's fast-growing West Valley through a modern, streamlined home buying experience. Floria is expected to deliver more than 8,000 homes in the coming years and will feature a blend of residential options, parks, trails, and community spaces inspired by the natural beauty of the high Sonoran desert. Additional models from Brightland Homes, Cortland Communities, KB Home, Lennar, Meritage Homes, and New Home Company will open throughout the summer and fall, leading up to the official grand opening of the community in November. That concludes the article, Teravalis Opens First Model Homes. The next article is The Naked Truth, Decency is In, Around the Bloomingtown, written by Judy Bloom, West Valley View columnist. People, cover up! Yes, that is the mandate being imposed on beachgoers in crowded beach towns across Southern Europe. Why? Because folks are walking into shops, grocery stores, and cafes in skimpy bathing suits. One mayor of a town in Spain has pleaded, "Show some decency. We do not want to see your half-naked body traipsing around our quaint village." Oh, and the locals are blaming it all on Americans. Go on vacation. Have a few drinks. Sit on the sand. Why not go wandering around the small town and do a little shopping? It's time to relax. Wear that bathing suit and let it all hang out. Yikes! The eyes can only take so much. Cover up, please. In Arizona, we have very hot summers and do not have to look at people at the grocery store wearing swim trunks or bikinis. Try that in Phoenix and let me know how it works out. Your rubber flip-flops can disintegrate on hot pavement, and touching a car handle can result in third-degree burns. No, we run the risk of instantaneous combustion if we go outside half-naked, unless it is to jump into a pool. These are the dog days of summer, when the heat is so intense that our doggies don't even want to venture outside to make doo-doo. This is the time of the year when those expensive leather seats in your car can fry your skin, and steering wheels become untouchable after parked for more than a few minutes in the sun. It's when we might feel like walking around naked, but have the good sense to know that death would come quickly if we went out not covered up. No, we aren't at a beach with a cool breeze, white sand, and a who-will-notice attitude. Why blame American tourists for this lack of decency? Aren't there plenty of nude beaches in coastal European towns? The argument is that, yes, there might be nude beaches, but Europeans don't walk around their towns naked or overexposed like Americans. Ha! These are not evidence-based accusations, and more research is required. A trip to Europe may clear things up. Americans are often laughed at by our European neighbors because of our loud voices, white tennis shoes, and insistence on ice in every beverage. We are not known for traipsing around sans clothes, especially in Arizona. Although one day, while driving on a busy road, I saw an older gentleman jogging in a bright red Speedo, green sneakers, and a straw cowboy hat. Let's just say it was a shocking and frightful sight, especially in 100-degree heat at 4 in the afternoon. I spent 15 years living in California and never witnessed many beachgoers shopping or eating in restaurants in their bathing suits. Of course, there are always those signs by the entrance of establishments that say, no shoes, no shirt, no service. Problem solved. Tourists, beaches, bathing suits, the trifecta of a good time. Perhaps the naked truth is that during summer, decency is in the eyes of the beholder. That concludes the article entitled, The Naked Truth, Decency is In. Our next article is, Terracon Promotes 2 to Senior Associate. Terracon, a consulting engineering firm specializing in environmental facilities, geotechnical and materials services, promoted Eddie Ramirez, PE, and Mike Peters. Ramirez was promoted to senior associate and serves as the geotechnical department manager of the firm's Phoenix office. Ramirez, who has been with Terracon for 9 years, supervises the daily operations of a department, including staff training, development and performance review, utilization of equipment and facilities, safety oversight, quality of services and work product, timely delivery of services, and adherence to policies and procedures. Eddie's promotion to senior associate reflects not only his technical expertise and leadership within our geotechnical department, but also his unwavering commitment to our clients and team, said Brent M. Borchers, PE, Regional Operations Director. His dedication over the past decade has helped shape the culture of excellence we strive for at Terracon, and we're proud to recognize his continued impact. Peters, who has been with Terracon for 10 years, was also promoted to Senior Associate. He is currently Terracon's laboratory manager for Tempe and Avondale, where he's built a team of more than 25 certified engineering technicians. Peters helps lead the laboratory services for the Rocky Mountain Division. He serves as project manager for clients across the southwestern United States and is a part-time national account manager. Mike's advancement to senior associate reflects his steadfast dedication to excellence, leadership, and outstanding client service, Borcher said. As laboratory manager in both Tempe and Avondale, he has continually raised the bar for our team and enhanced our regional reputation. We're proud to celebrate Mike's achievements and look forward to the continued value he'll bring in this elevated role. That concludes the article, Terracon Promotes 2 to Senior Associate. That concludes news from the westvalleyview.com. Remember, if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org, broadcast info, and audio on demand. Now let's move on to news from the Wickenburg Sun. Our next article is Congress Forms Historical Society, written by Claire Halliburton. Three members of the Congress community recently formed the Congress Historical Society with the aim of preserving the town's rich history. Stating that she's wanted to create a historical society for many years, founding member Loretta Morales said the project really jump-started this year with the help of other founding members, Danny Caudill and Tanya Allen. It all started one afternoon when Morales stopped into the Dusty Diamond thrift store and requested that the store contact her regarding any merchandise relating to the history of Congress. Hearing about Morales' request, Caudill wanted to get involved and offered a space in the Congress thrift shop to host monthly meetings and store the Society's growing collection of artifacts. Both history buffs, Morales and Allen, crossed paths through their Facebook pages dedicated to history relating to Congress and the surrounding areas. Sharing a passion for preserving the past, Morales said that people regularly voice their appreciation for their Facebook posts and their commitment to preserving the area's history. Morales said people would be surprised to learn just how important the area's mining district was to the United States, noting that she's come across newspaper articles pertaining to the mines in newspapers as far away as New York. They see this little bitty town that's practically dead to them, and they don't realize one time there was 5,000 residents there, Morales said. It was a booming town, and it was very important to the economy, and I want for people to look at our little towns differently, to look back and try to imagine what it once was. A third-generation Congress resident, Morales' family has lived in the area since her grandfather settled here in the 1900s, and she loves looking through the archives and stumbling across her grandfather's name, and she wants others to have that same opportunity. In the future, the group intends on hosting events to spread information about the town's history. I would love to do an oral history and get some of the old-timers in, Morales stated. She would enjoy the opportunity to have people speak and reminisce about the good old days. Morales said the community history is constantly being lost while the older generation passes away, and she wants to preserve as much of that history as she can. The Historical Society accepts any artifacts relating to the history of Congress and the surrounding areas, newspapers, photos, books, and more, and encourages people to donate these items instead of disposing of them. Anyone who wishes to donate items can take them to the Dusty Diamond and specify that the items are for the Historical Society. The group currently meets on the first Wednesday of every month at the Dusty Diamond, located at 22595 Highway 71, Number 5. Anyone is free to attend or become a member. For more information, visit the Historical Society's Facebook page at Congress AZ Historical Society. That concludes the article, Congress Forms Historical Society. Our next article is Council Approves 2026 Marketing Strategy, written by Claire Halliburton. Wasatch Mountains Media has been chosen to spearhead Wickenburg's 2026 marketing campaign. Expected to be funded by the Arizona Office of Tourism's Proposition 302 grant, the campaign aims to market Wickenburg as a sought-after tourist destination. Using the message, Discover Wickenburg, where the spirit of the West comes to life, the newly adopted marketing strategy is meant to serve as a guide to establish a long-term marketing vision. Maya Kuiwich, management intern, stated during a presentation at Town Council's August 4th meeting that effective marketing begins with delivering the right message to the right audience. To accomplish this, Kuiwich commented that the town must inspire exploration by showing visitors all the opportunity Wickenburg has to offer. The key objectives of the marketing strategy include strengthen Wickenburg's brand presence, increase visitation, increase the average length of stay of visitors, enhance visitor engagement through targeted outreach. The strategy aims to target several audiences, including the Western United States, Wyoming, Montana, Wisconsin, and Idaho, as well as neighboring states Nevada, California, Colorado, New Mexico, and Utah, several parts of Arizona, as well as other countries such as Canada and Mexico. According to the marketing strategy, Wickenburg can appeal to these audiences in different ways. Western United States, snowbirds looking for warmer weather. Neighboring states, the ability for a short getaway vacation. Arizona, day trips and weekend vacations. And international, the chance to experience authentic Western heritage and the desert landscape. The Economic Development and Transportation Advisory Committee, which is heavily involved in marketing Wickenburg, supported and adopted the plan at a recent meeting. Steve Hamilton, a member of the committee, stated during the town council presentation, "The project identifies key audiences, refines Wickenburg's tourism messaging, and provides strategic marketing efforts." The committee expressed strong support and recognized the potential to grow tourism, support local businesses, and a road to possibly impact the local economy. Deputy Town Manager Tim Son stated the EDTAC has been a valuable source in creating the marketing strategy. "Their insights help guide our messaging, which requires a thoughtful balance between celebrating Wickenburg's proud Western heritage and identify as the team roping capital of the world, and showcasing the town's many other offerings, such as outdoor recreation, arts and culture, shopping, and events," Swan said. As part of the marketing strategy presentation, Nick Gusano, principal of Wasatch Mountains Media, stated the company's approach to marketing is designed to produce real, measurable results through data, impressions, click-through rates, and website traffic. Calling the company a strategic ally, Gustino stated that Wasatch Mountains Media is working towards building the digital foundation for long-term tourism growth. Gustiano advised that the company does not wish to change Wickenburg's identity, but hopes to amplify the character and charm that the town is known for. According to Swan, the strategy has received support from council through community input, performance data, and partnerships with forward-thinking businesses. "With these things aligning, Wickenburg is in a stronger position than ever before," Swan said. "We're proud of the direction we're heading and remain devoted to building on Wickenburg's success as a destination that offers visitors a uniquely authentic experience." The marketing campaign is currently being designed using the adopted marketing strategy. EDTAC will review and give input on the campaign at its September 10th meeting. For more information on the marketing strategy, visit wickenburgaz.gov. That concludes the article, "Council Approves 2026 Marketing Strategy." Next up, obituaries. Wallace Mourne passed away August 10th. Next, let's hit on some of the areas under community calendar. Ask a Master Gardener meets every second Monday from September to April. Master Gardeners will answer questions about growing fruit, vegetable, and flowers in Wickenburg and surrounding areas, meeting at the library from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Just for Today, Narcotics Anonymous meets Thursday nights at 7 p.m. at 2050 West Wickenburg Way. Celebrate Recovery, accredited with Celebrate Recovery National Christ-Centered Recovery Program, Saturdays, 5:30 p.m., social, 6 p.m. Meeting is downstairs at Mount Hope Assembly, 550 Penn Lane. Phone number is 480-604-5419. Wickenburg Business and Professional Women meets the first Thursday monthly, except July and August, at 6 p.m. at Charlie's Steakhouse. For more information, call 928-684-7907. This concludes news from the Wickenburg Sun. Remember, you can take Sun Sounds with you. You can get our stream and on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. I'm Karen Kelly from Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you're listening to the West Valley News Digest. For the remaining time, I will be reading news from Glendale, Peoria, and Surprise from yourvalley.net, as well as the online editions of the Glendale, Peoria, and Surprise Independents, as well as the Glendale Star and Peoria Times. So let's continue on. The next article is Glendale Council Considers Age Limits for E-Bikes and Scooters, written by Richard Smith. Northern Glendale Council members Ray Malner and Lauren Tolmachoff see electric scooters and bikes zipping by their neighborhood and hear about their dangers from constituents. In Southern Glendale, Council Member Leandro Baldenegro sees a large number of students ride their e-bikes to Glendale American School, where he works. And Councilmember Lupe Cochas had to brake when a kid on an e-bike cut in front of him on Maryland Avenue before they blew through the stop sign. Glendale does not have an ordinance to deal specifically with e-bikes and e-scooters, other than a regulation already prohibiting the use of electric bicycles and scooters in parks. Council and staff laid the groundwork for an ordinance during a workshop discussion August 12th. It's just a matter of time, in my mind, before tragedy strikes and someone gets seriously hurt, said Deputy City Manager Rick St. John. An August 1st collision between a pickup and a 13-year-old Mountain Ridge freshman riding an e-bike to school nearly turned tragic. St. John said he was told the e-bike was not a contributing factor. In that wreck, it was just inattention from both parties. As I understand, he was going the same direction as traffic. Both had stopped for a red light. And when the light turned green for 67th Avenue, both vehicles went. The bike to cross the street and the truck to turn right, St. John said. Tolmachoff has heard from many constituents worried their child would be hurt riding a scooter, or that they would get hit darting around in traffic. And these calls came before the accident. E-scooter and e-bike use escalated north of Loop 101 and just south of it in the past year. It's a big problem in Arrowhead Ranch. I know it's a big problem in North Phoenix and North Peoria because I talked to Ann O'Brien, whose district is to the east, and Peoria leaders. We're dealing with the same thing, Tolmachoff said after Tuesday's council meeting. Obviously, you can't just snap your fingers and have an ordinance. Phoenix recently adopted an electronic bike ordinance. Electric bicycles are defined by state law as having fully operable pedals and an electric motor of less than 750 watts. The bikes are broken into three classes. Electric scooters have two or three wheels, handlebars, and a floorboard. They are powered by an electric motor with a maximum speed of 20 miles per hour. Meanwhile, motor-driven cycles do not have pedals and are governed by the same laws as standard motorcycles. The fastest electric bikes are limited to 28 miles per hour. Basically, they are restricted to roadways and designated bike lanes on roadways, St. John said. Bikes that go above 28 miles per hour and have pedals are illegal. Malner said he has witnessed some going 40 miles per hour. St. John said in most cases, families are removing a governor that limits the bike's speed. There is not one area of Malner's district between roughly Peoria Avenue and Bell Road that has more issues with e-bikes than another. I think it's pretty pervasive, Malner said. The main discussion topic was whether to build age limits into ordinance. Conscious said he has heard a lot from Cactus District residents about the speed and sound of the bikes. I would also support that it be limited to people over the age of 16 or those with a valid permit or valid driver's license, Conscious said. I read recently about a tragic accident that happened in Pennsylvania where she lost control and ended up in the street and getting hit by a car. Their family is looking for legislation in their community to prevent that happening to anybody else. Malner and Guzman said limiting the use of e-bikes and scooters to age 16 and up was a bit aggressive. Mayor Jerry Wyers was along the same lines. When prompted to come to a consensus, Tomachoff favored limiting electric scooters to ages 12 and up and e-bikes to age 16 and, as does Conscious, Turner and Guzman. If we set the minimum age to ride an electric scooter at 12 and electric bicycles at 16, I think we wouldn't have an enforcement issue, St. John said. Wyer said he wanted to make sure all kids using these electric scooters and bikes are wearing helmets, first and foremost, as did Turner and Tomachoff. A robust education program through schools and for adults in Glendale will be a key. Council came to consensus on a warning for a first offense before going to a civil citation, as well as a 90-day window before the final ordinance is enforced. I think if a person is 16 years old, they should be held accountable, the same as an adult driving the car or a 16-year-old with a license driving the car, Wyer said. He believed most current laws should cover this. St. John described most current laws on e-bikes as minimalist. Another debate sprung up on whether scooters and e-bikes can be ridden on sidewalks or only in designated bike lanes and neighborhood streets. Riding some of these small scooters on roadways that are very bumpy is more dangerous than a sidewalk, and that causes me some concern, Malner said. He said that standard bicycles are allowed on sidewalks, which is much safer than streets. Turner and Tomachoff disagreed because of the speed and size of e-bikes. Sidewalks in the Cactus District can be narrow, and some of them end abruptly, Conscious said. We heard the word sidewalk as if they're all the same, and I guarantee they're not, Baldinagro said. Allowing e-bikes on sidewalks along arterial roads might be feasible from an enforcement perspective, St. John said. Wyers suggested allowing scooters on sidewalks where the speed limit on the attached street is 25 miles per hour or less. For streets with a higher street speed limit, they could only be on the roadway in a bike lane. St. John suggested the restrictions would work better if it was sidewalks on roads with higher speeds and streets of slower neighborhood roads. Staff will now work with the city attorney's office to draft a proposal for the ordinance. The main goal is safety for kids and safety for drivers, watching for these kids on scooters, Malner said. He also wants Glendale to allow room for agency and the need for an ability for parents to be chosen for their child. The ultimate goal is to have a little bit more mature riders on the e-bikes that have a better understanding of consequences, Tomachoff said. That concludes the article, Glendale Council Considers Age Limits for E-Bikes, Scooters. Up next is the article, Valley NASCAR Driver Looking to Move Up Playoff Standing This Weekend, written by Steve Stockmar. With two-thirds of the NASCAR Cup Series races in his rearview mirror, Glendale native Michael McDowell is looking to make his way up the standings under the lights this Saturday, August 16th, in Richmond. Over the first 24 races of the season, McDowell has tallied 2 top 5, 3 top 10, and 12 top 20 finishes. The 2021 Daytona 500 winner is currently 22nd in points, 44 markers below the playoff cut line. He will pilot Spire Motorsports number 71 Go Workforce Chevrolet ZL1 in Saturday's 400-lap race at Richmond Raceway. The Cookout 400 engines roar at 4:30 p.m. Arizona time. Running Richmond on a Saturday night should be fun race, McDowell said through Spire. I think we have a lot to show this weekend in Richmond, and I'm looking forward to getting to the track. I have been watching a lot of film, and us, as a group, have put a big emphasis on our simulator sessions, so I feel confident heading into this weekend and expect to have a good run. McDowell has made 27 starts in NASCAR's premier division at the famed 0.75-mile D-shaped oval and has compiled one top 10, sixth place, and five top 20 finishes. In the series' most recent visit to Richmond last August, he started 28th and raced his way to a 15th place showing. The 40-year-old's earliest racing came in North Glendale as a kid. Friday and Saturday nights during the summer, practicing and racing at PKRA, Phoenix Kart Racing Association, he told the Independent, of the track located at 22500 43rd Avenue E, when asked about his favorite memories growing up in Glendale. It was a fun time in life, racing with my family and our friends. It was a great community out there, and it was a special time. McDowell calls Phoenix Raceway at 7602 Jimmy Johnson Drive in Avondale his home track. That's where the NASCAR Cup Series Championship will take place on Sunday, November 2nd. McDowell has claimed three Xfinity Fastest Lap Awards this season, clocking the fastest lap in the Daytona 500, Phoenix Raceway, and Talladega, Alabama's Super Speedway. The team is one of just three in the series to tally three or more bonus points via the program. That concludes the article, Valley NASCAR Driver Looking to Move Up Playoff Standing This Weekend. Our next article is Youth Justice Project Needs Members in Surprise. City looking for local students to participate in teen court. The City of Surprise is on the lookout for new members to join the Surprise Youth Justice Project. The group is comprised of 6th through 12th grade students who are committed to increasing the availability of restorative justice opportunities for teens. Students will participate in Teen Court, a diversion program for juvenile offenders, through a partnership with Maricopa County and the Surprise City Court. Teen Court allows a jury of peers assess a juvenile offender's actions. The jury then decides on the appropriate steps the offender must take to repair the harm they have caused. These practices are meant to resolve conflict, deter future offenses, and allow the offender to take responsibility for their actions without permanent stigmatization. The program begins Monday, August 25th, with a group orientation at Surprise City Court, and it runs through April 2026. Applicants must be current 6th to 12th grade students residing in Surprise or attending school or homeschool in the city. All applicants must be able to attend meetings conducted as teen court sessions from 3 to 5 p.m. on the last Monday of every month, except on city-observed holidays. Applicants must complete the Maricopa County Juvenile Probation Department Teen Court Program application and email it to CARA, that's K-A-R-A, dot polling, P-O-L-I-N-G, at surpriseaz.gov. Applications are due by Wednesday, August 20th, and applicants will be notified of acceptance into the program by Friday, August 22nd. That concludes the article, Youth Justice Project Needs Members in Surprise. Our next article is Goddard School is Coming to Peoria. The Goddard School is set to open its first location in Peoria, 8348 West Deer Valley Road, bringing an inquiry-based learning experience to local families in early 2026. The Goddard School of Peoria will be the second location for Goddard School franchisees Kimberly Camarillo and Joellen Johnson, who have supported the community and families in the greater Phoenix area via the Goddard School of Goodyear since 2009. The more than 11,000-square-foot early childhood education center will have 10 classrooms to provide care for and educate about 150 students from ages 6 weeks to 6 years old. Additionally, the school will add 30 teaching jobs to the community. We're thrilled to bring the Goddard School experience to the vibrant Peoria community and look forward to partnering with local families to create a safe, nurturing environment where children can thrive, Camarillo said. As longtime Goddard School owners, we believe deeply in the power of nurturing young minds during their most formative years, and our goal is to develop a lifelong love for learning in our students, while supporting working families who need access to the highest quality child care. The new school will feature an indoor gym and multiple outdoor playgrounds. Additionally, the school will be equipped with hospital-grade sanitization equipment to ensure a healthy environment. The Goddard School's inquiry-based education program, Wonder of Learning, embraces how children learn best through their innate curiosity. Because research confirms that when wonder leads, learning follows. Wonder of Learning features a curriculum developed by a group of educators, researchers, physicians, and early childhood experts, as well as built-in assessment of academic and social-emotional progress and family communication via a proprietary app. Inquiry-based learning, which guides the Wonder of Learning curriculum, is a teaching and learning approach that focuses on the natural curiosity and sense of wonder children bring into the classroom. With teacher-guided inquiry topics, children learn about themselves and the world around them by exploring their interests, investigating concepts, and asking questions. This concludes the article, Goddard School is Coming to Peoria. Let's move on to our next article, which is Residents Sue City Over Panhandling Bans. Three Glendale residents have filed a lawsuit alleging that the city's panhandling bans violate their First Amendment right to engage in constitutionally protected speech. Amy Hughes, Denise Carr, and Gabriel Gilbert are seeking a preliminary injunction to stop the city from enforcing the ordinances. They are represented by Public Justice, the ACLU of Arizona, and the First Amendment Clinic at Arizona State University's Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. The Glendale City Council passed the two ordinances in October 2022, just months before the Phoenix suburb hosted Super Bowl 57. The panhandling ordinance forbids people from asking for money, donations, or other items of value in public, including on public transit, at bus stops, from someone in a car, and in several other locations. The street and median ordinance bans pedestrians from standing on medians or in streets for any reason, including free speech and expression. Council discussions regarding the ordinance's passage and enforcement have primarily focused on individuals perceived to be living in poverty or lacking secure housing. Violations can result in arrest, fines up to $2,500, and jail time, creating further barriers for people experiencing homelessness. Like many communities nationwide, Maricopa County has seen a rise in homelessness and housing insecurity. A point-in-time count earlier this year found more than 9,700 people experiencing homelessness in the county. It is common to see people holding signs requesting donations at intersections and highway interchanges in cities across the region. Advocates say Glendale's ordinances effectively ban requests for financial support in all publicly accessible locations in the city, disproportionately penalizing people experiencing homelessness and financial hardship. Federal courts have repeatedly found anti-panhandling regulations unconstitutional, including an Arizona state law, a Flagstaff enforcement policy, and a similar ordinance in Phoenix. Criminalizing a person asking for help isn't only unconstitutional, it's wrong, said Lauren Bial, staff attorney for the ACLU of Arizona. Punishing someone with an exorbitant fine or putting them in jail when they can't make ends meet perpetuates a vicious cycle that keeps people struggling and in poverty. Ordinances like these blatantly violate the First Amendment and make communities less safe. Many of us will, at one point, need to depend on the generosity and compassion of our neighbors to make ends meet, said Leslie Bailey, director of Public Justice Debtors Prison Project. Instead of trying to push poverty and homelessness out of public view by making it a crime to ask for help, cities like Glendale should be focused on helping people get out of poverty. The First Amendment protects speech from government regulation, even, and especially when that speech is disfavored or unpleasant, said Aaron Bowman, assistant teaching professor with the First Amendment Clinic at ASU's Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. Glendale cannot prohibit certain messages, like a request for money, without a compelling reason, and its desire to eliminate the perceived blight of visible homelessness is far from sufficient. That concludes the article, Residents Sue City Over Panhandling Bans. As a reminder, you can hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or small smart home device. And let's continue with the next article. Desert Diamond completes $42 million renovation, article written by Joe McHugh. State Farm Stadium has hosted notable events like Super Bowl 57 and Kendrick Lamar and Taylor Swift concerts. Now, neighboring Desert Diamond Arena has been overhauled to the tune of $42 million to continue wooing entertainers like Chris Stapleton, professional bull riding, WWE's SmackDown, and Raw, Donald Trump and Kamala Harris election rallies, and the Arizona Rattlers. The former home of the Arizona Coyotes was converted into a dedicated concert and entertainment venue. I've been mayor for almost 13 years, and I've watched the transformation of the city and how sports and entertainment have become more and more experiential, Glendale Mayor Jerry Wyers said. People want to be able to come out, not only see something, but they want to be part of something. Wyers said he seconds Desert Diamond Arena's mission of serving the customer first, providing the most convenient, safest, fastest, best experience for the customer. The project started in 2023 when ASM Global took over ownership of Desert Diamond Arena, and the Glendale City Council approved a $42 million budget for the venue's renovations. The main concourse has been overhauled to be more ergonomic and efficient, while now bearing a sleek, dark gray paint job. ASM Global focused heavily on creating a feng shui-like environment. Fans will now have an easier time in the main concourse, as there are new grab-and-go concession stands, accessible bars, and ease of entrance to the seating areas. Studio 623 suites are booths designed for smaller groups, 4 to 6 guests, to bring ticket holders closer to the action. Each suite is decorated with locally sourced vinyl albums and a custom-built table that resembles a mixer. On the second level, the luxury takes a step up. The new Desert Diamond Arena includes a new luxury concourse called the View Club Seats. With its open, socially friendly design, the View has a custom-built bar. New suites and gourmet food add to the luxury. Weir said the renovations add to the Westgate's reputation as a business and entertainment hotspot. "It's just doing some incredible things with the amount of growth that's happening around here," he said. "High tide rises all boats, and well it does. And the more successful we are here at Westgate, the whole area just continues to grow. People are coming out here looking for an experience, and that's what we want. We don't want them to go to California and spend their money." That concludes the article entitled, "Desert Diamond Completes $42 Million Renovation." That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining me for the West Valley News Digest. I'm Karen Kelly, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer. Please stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds of Arizona.